the vibes. Welcome back to another episode of the Hoop Genius Podcast, brought to you by NBA 2K26. It's myself, Mo Mootsy, and today, Coach Brendan Sir is not here. I'm sharing with you an interview I did with the legendary Mr. Joakim Noah. I also want to send a huge thank you to Foot Locker because they're the ones who organized this during the NBA London weekend. They invited Joakim down to one of their stores and they allowed me to host a live interview with him with an audience. And then there was an audience Q&A at the end, and I've included that in here. We hadn't shown any of the people on camera. I didn't know if we could film them, but we have his answers to those questions. So hopefully that's all good. This was a really insightful interview, and I was thinking about this. Guys, we've had some insane guests this season. You know, whether it's the Isaiah Thomases of the world, whether it's the Joakim Noahs of the world. In fact, Jamal Crawford hit me up the other day saying he can't wait to come on the podcast as well. And I just need one thing from you. Please, please subscribe. Please tell your friends. Help me pay these bills by subscribing to the YouTube, leaving a review on Spotify or Apple, 5 stars and all of that. It would mean the world to me. But without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, here is my conversation with the one and only Mr. Joakim Noah.
What's up, Joakim? Good.
Hey, listen.
That's good.
I know you lot can be louder than that. That was a weak round of applause. This is Joakim Noah, ladies and gentlemen. Make some noise.
What's up, guys?
That's what I'm talking about. It's not every day you have a former Defensive Player of the Year, former All-Star, one of my favourite players from the 2010s era in the building. So, Joakim, we appreciate you being here. How have you found London so far?
It's an honour to be here, man. Seriously, London is a place that's always been special to me. I have two sisters from here. So I used to come here a lot as a kid, and I remember Camden Market. That was my spot.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Well, we got a few questions, you know, just about your career and stuff. Yeah. And then the audience is going to ask you a few questions as well. Now, growing up, you played youth basketball over here in Europe. Yeah. And recently, we've seen international players taking over the NBA. What do you think is the reason for the recent success of international players in the league?
I think the Europe style is less about the superstar. It's less about individual. You know, it's about growing up as a team, trying to win as a team. I just feel like the development is just completely different. Right now in the States, it's a lot about it's capitalism at its highest level, so even the kids are getting paid with NIL deals and things like that. So it's a complete mess in the US right now. Basketball is becoming like an elite sport. You see less kids from the neighborhood because it is an education, and it is a lot to learn to be able to play at the highest level. You have to have good coaching, and but I think Europe is doing a great job, and it's just changing the whole league. All the best players are coming from Europe.
Yeah, you guys didn't know, Joakim's got French heritage. Obviously, Victor Wembanyama is dominating the NBA right now. In 2024, two of the top picks were from France as well. We got some young hoopers in the building. What's the secret sauce that you can share with these guys to really develop their games?
I mean, I think it's a mindset to start. And it's basketball is not just playing a game and then that's it. It's doing your push-ups. It's waking up. It's the discipline. So I'm a third generation athlete. My father was a football player. My grandfather was a football player. My father was a tennis player and I played basketball, but the education was the same. You know, it's stretching, the massage, you know, getting your homework done so you can go and hoop some more. Are you waking up in the morning and going and get your shots up? Can you guys, three of you guys, go and get your shots up and get 100 shots, 200 shots before school? You know, not everybody does that, but that's the sacrifices you got to make. Like for me, even though it was different sports, what my father really instilled in me was just going to run. Go for a run before school sometimes. Nobody else was doing that. And I was one of the best runners. It was because I was running before school and I was doing that a couple times a week. So it's all about the discipline. Whether you play well or you play like shit, you know, you got to be back in the gym the next day. You win the game, you lose the game, we're back at it. And that's just the mentality. It's just consistency, consistency every day, and that's how you get better.
Absolutely, love it. Now, I've got a question that I've been wondering for years now. You have one of the most unique jump shots the NBA has ever seen. Where did that jump shot form come from? Because I'm mad at the results. It went in, but where did that form come from?
It didn't always go in. It didn't always. You know, that was definitely one of my weaknesses, but I worked on it every day. Even though it was ugly, you know, it was demoralizing for the other team. Exactly. They were like, oh, how did, what? How did that shit go in? Honestly, just, it's just my style.
Now, as someone who grew up playing in the playgrounds, one of my favorite parts of the game is the trash talk. You were a great trash talker in the NBA. But I heard President Obama was trash talking you in a pickup game once. What was it like going up against a president like that?
He was talking about my jump shot. He was a little bit too comfortable, you know, in front of everybody. He was really, you know, talking trash. So when we got into the game, I had to pick him up. You know, I had to be a little physical with him, just so he knows, like, don't get it twisted. Like, I'm playing this game at a very high level. And I don't care if you're the president. I'm going to lock that up, you know. So that was the vibe for sure.
I respect it, man. It's on the court. There's no rules on the court, right? No. Who are the best trash talkers you went up against during your career?
I mean, there were funny guys. Nick Young was a real funny guy. But then you had guys who were just, like, trying to take your soul. And for me, it was like I had a poster of Kevin Garnett growing up. So I had his jersey, and I remember one of my first games in the NBA. I told him, I was like, KG, you know, you're one of my favorite players. You think, you know, we can talk after the game? You know, just, I have a few questions for you. He's like, why are you talking to me, rookie? Like, don't talk to me. And he started talking loud. It was bad. He really embarrassed me in front of 25,000 people in the arena. And it's been on ever since. So the trash talk was definitely helped me. It helped me realize that there's no love during competition. Don't try to be friendly with opponents during competition. So it was a real learning moment for me. And then when my career was over, we were able to talk to each other on a podcast and just squash the, I mean, beef is a strong word. I wouldn't say beef, but the rivalry.
I really appreciate you censoring what KG actually said, because that ain't appropriate. I appreciate you censoring that for us. Now, I think a really underrated part of your game was your passing ability, you know, the playmaking from that center spot. Nowadays, we see guys like Jokic dominating with his passing from the five, Wemby and Giannis, two other 7-footers who are killing it in every aspect of the game. What are your thoughts on how the center position has evolved? Because for a long time, it was a small guards league there.
I think that it's easy to put that narrative, but there's been point centers along the journey. You know, I think of Sabonis, I think of Vlade Divac. A lot of the European players were, you know, good at everything. So you have to have a certain skill set. Being able to pass the ball from the top of the key was always one of my strengths. The dribble handoff, you know, being able to, you know, pass with both hands, I think is something that definitely helped me with my game.
Now, you called Jokic your favorite player in the world. Is that still true?
Yeah, Jokic. I mean, one of my favorites for sure.
As a former defensive player of the year, if you had to go out there and the coach said, you're guarding Jokic, how would you try to stop him or slow him down?
Oh, my goodness. I'm actually happy I don't have to do that. You know, I sleep better at night. And it's very easy, you know, from London when he's all the way in Denver to tell me how I would guard him. You know, it's complicated. You know, even guys like Wembanyama are having a hard time. Everybody's having a hard time with that guy. So you don't shut him down. You try to slow him down as much as possible. I would run as much as I can to try to get him as tired as possible on both ends. I think just be physical, and but look, it's not an easy task, and you don't, you know, somebody like that can make 3-4 shots in a row. You just got to keep going at him, keep going at him, because it's over 48 minutes.
Now, your basketball IQ was crazy on offense and on defense. For the young hoopers here, what are the qualities you look for that make a great defender?
I think the defense thing is it's a mindset and it's an attitude, and it's about how bad do you want to win. I see a lot of guys like take plays off on the defensive end, and I think another thing for all the young people, it's like I see a lot of people talking on the offensive side of the ball. When you play defense is when you can really, really be loud. Like, I got your back. Help side, I got your help. You got to let everybody know. And as you get better, you're playing in front of big crowds too. So you have to understand the crowds are going crazy and your teammates got to hear you. Screen left, screen right. You know, you have to be really aggressive with the way that you speak. So sometimes your personality could be shy. When you're on a basketball court, you can't be shy. You can't be shy. So you can change your personality to whoever you are. It doesn't matter who you are off the court. Like, people would come up to me all the time like, yo, Keenan, what's up, man? I'm like, why is he so crunk? And it's because that's the way I was on the court. But that doesn't mean that's how I am off the court.
Who were the hardest players that you had to go up against during your career?
You ever heard of a guy called Shaq?
Maybe.
So playing against Shaq would be like pushing against the wall as hard as you can, and nothing would happen. I'm happy it was the end of his career, because primetime Shaq would have just, you know, dominated me. But him, Yao Ming was a tough cover. He was 7'6", shooting you pretty well. And then like guys like Dirk Nowitzki. So we would go from like one day guarding Shaq, and then the next day it's Dirk. And it's like every single night it's somebody. The thing about the NBA is you think it's Shaq, you think it's Dirk, but then the next day you have like a guy like Chris Kaman, and you're like, I don't even know who that is. 20. If you don't come ready, they busting your ass. So you gotta come ready every night.
Yeah, there's so many great players in the league, like especially when you think about that era you played in. You've got the Amari Stoudemire, the Kevin Garnett, you've got like Zach Randolph and these guys. So I don't envy the assignments that you had to pick up on the defensive side of the ball. But if you look at the modern NBA right now, and with your skill set, if you could put yourself on any team to give yourself a chance of winning that championship, which team would you want to play on right now?
I think I would have loved to play with Steph Curry. I would have loved to play with Golden State. You know, I just, the pinch post, the split actions, the way that they play, I think really fit my style of play. Dribble handoffs, especially with that kind of shooting, just spreads the court. But then they're also older team. And I like playing with the young guys. Like, the young guys come ready every night. They're hungry. I actually really like Orlando. So I think that would be a team that I think I would have played well.
Well, maybe, you know, bring some sneakers to the game tomorrow. You just got to stay ready, like you said. Listen, one of my things that I think about all the time is that we're losing recipes, especially when I go on TikTok and I see young people's opinions about basketball. So for the kids out there, can you please explain to them? Because sometimes they don't believe me. How special was prime Derrick Rose?
So I had the blessing to play with this guy, and I know that you guys check out his highlights. I don't know if some of you guys were probably really young when he was prime time, but he was the most electrifying player. And he got to be the number one pick and represent his city playing for the Chicago Bulls. And the humility that he carried himself with throughout, like, big success. I thought that's what I'm most proud of, is the way that he handled, okay, youngest MVP ever. Okay, you got to carry that every day, you know? He didn't get Hollywood on us. He stayed very focused and true to who he was. And then even after the injury, when his own city kind of, I mean, turn on him is a hard word, but there was a lot of expectation for him to come back. I don't know if the older guys probably remember. You had the Adidas commercials, the return, and, you know, you're recovering from an ACL, and, you know, everybody's telling you to come back. Now it takes a year, but at the time they were telling him to come back to play in the playoffs. We were a good team, and just the fact that he's not bitter about what happened to him, because he is one of the biggest what if. What if he didn't get hurt? You know, we had an opportunity, we had a chance to win a championship, and we didn't. And the injuries, I feel like, definitely had a role with that. But to see the way he carries himself, to me, that's the... To see him happy, to see him at peace with his kids, not bitter about the situation, we really protect that time because we were all so close. And no, I mean, I could talk about him for hours. You know, he's one of my brothers, and it was a real honor to lace him up with him.
Now, while Derek was injured, you came fourth in MVP voting. You really took that opportunity and kept the team afloat. What gave you your competitive edge when you were on the court?
I mean, what gave it to me? I mean, you got to figure that part is, it's instilled in you from the beginning. You know, I was raised that way. I was raised to be a competitor, but that was in me from the start. I love competing, and you know, I wasn't gonna just, because Derek went down, stopped competing hard. And I got more opportunities. When Derek was around, my role completely changed. I was a screener, defender, get second opportunities on the glass. And then when, you know, I'm playing with one of the best point guards to ever touch the basketball, my favorite thing to do in the world was grab the defensive rebound and bring it up myself, because I thought I was the point guard. But you're playing with the fastest guy on with the ball in the world. So, okay, your role changes when you're playing with a guy like that. And, okay, I had my two all-star appearances are when Derek got hurt. But it never changed our relationship. It never broke our bond. And we stayed loyal to each other. And I think that's why we're so close today.
What was the best piece of advice that you got during your NBA career?
Oh my goodness. The best piece of advice? I remember losing 6 games in a row early on in my rookie year. And I was really frustrated because I had never lost that much. And the thing about the league is you have to move on real quick. So after a loss, you can't hold on to that for so long. After a win, you can't hold on because the games just keep coming. You're playing 3-4 games in a week. So it's all about the next play. It's all about moving on fast and not losing sleep if you played well or if you played like voodoo.
All right, before we get the audience Q&A, I need some predictions from you, Joe.
Okay.
The 2026 NBA champions will be...
Houston Rockets.
The MVP will be...
Finals MVP?
No, regular season first.
Who you got? I would say Joker, but he's hurt, so you have to play a certain amount of games. So I don't think it can be him. Otherwise, he would be my top pick. Wemby's killing it, but he's coming off the bench. Can't play big minutes. Anthony Edwards? MVP? Luka? Yeah, Luka.
I'm saying Jaylen Brown.
That's your pick?
That's my pick. I'm a Celtics fan, though, for context, just in case you didn't know.
I mean, doubt it.
All right, listen, respect my boy Jaylen. Who's going to be the defensive player of the year?
Chet? I'll give it to Chet.
Chet? Okay, the last one from me.
Maybe Lou Dort. Don't sleep on Lou Dort.
The Dolce Chamber.
Can you imagine Lou Dort guarding you?
No. Thankfully, I never had to be guarded by anyone as good as Lou Dort. I know Pat ain't playing defense like Lou Dort over here. The last question from me. This year's All-Star Game format is slightly different. Will the international team beat either of the USA teams in the All-Star Game?
Absolutely. I think the international players always, they have something to prove. They want to show the Americans that they're better. It means more to them. I think I'm excited for this format. I'm excited to see the international players do their thing.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, before I give you guys a chance to ask some questions to Joakim, make some noise for Joakim Noah.
Thanks, guys.
All right.
Appreciate that.
Hands up. Who wants to ask a question? I'm going to let Joakim pick who he wants to answer from. Here we go, in the front.
What do you think, change your game from a high school standpoint and playing with your teammates from them to then moving on to the NBA?
Oh, yeah.
You know, you're playing against grown men in the NBA. When my first day, I said, my coach came up to me and said, "Do you know what NBA stands for?" And I said, "Yeah, National Basketball Association." He said, "No, no boys allowed." Okay, so when you start high school, you're playing against kids your age, and you go to college, you're playing against older kids, and then the professional is grown men. But you know what I realized? The drills that you're doing right now that your coach is teaching you, it's the same drills. LeBron James is doing the same drills. He's not doing something that different. He's lifting weights, he's getting his massage, he's stretching, he's going in the pool for recovery, he's getting his rest, and then it's all about the footwork, the hooks, getting your shots up. You can do that in the park. So the drills are the same.
So why do you think that you got to the level you did, but your former teammates didn't?
Good question. I promise you this, when I was 15, 16 years old, there was probably 100 kids in New York that were better than me. But you know what? It was like the gains that I would make in the summertime. My family was well off. My father was a tennis player. I stayed in New York at my coach's house. I was in the gym like 5-6 hours. Was it playing in a park game? Then I'd go to the gym, get my shots up. It was all day. Basketball is not just a game. It's from the morning you wake up to the moment you go to sleep. Are you doing your push-ups? Are you getting your core strength? Are you getting your legs strong? You have to get stronger. Like you were talking about the different levels, the biggest adjustment is the bump. You know, it's a different feeling. Like imagine LeBron James coming at you full speed. You know, that's 280 pounds. 6'9", 280, fast and athletic. You know, at the time, his chest is at the rim, you know. So when you work out in the summertime, I promise you, it's a different workout when you know that's coming. Those dates are circled on the calendar.
Thank you.
All right, who's next?
Rasta. Rasta right here, Dread.
So, coming from London, you know that our school here is heavily underfunded compared to other countries. Knowing that I don't have a media team every match that I play, or don't get opportunities that American kids have, what's your advice for me to get my name out there so scouts from other countries or America get to notice me?
If you're good enough, I promise you they'll notice you. I play with a guy from, my favorite teammate was from Brixton. And his name was Lou Aldang. You ever heard of him?
Yeah.
He's from Brixton. He's one of my favorite teammates, South Sudan, president of the South Sudan basketball team. We do a lot of work in Africa. And talk about lack of funding. You know, they'll travel 2 hours to get to a court. You know, you have access to courts. You have access to a lot. Okay, maybe it's not the same as America. Basketball is not as much a part of the culture like how football is, you know. But look, you have access on YouTube. You can see all the different things you need to do. You can see how Steph Curry trains. You can see how LeBron trained yesterday. You know, so you have access to the work. And it's all about the discipline. Are you doing this? Like, the kids are so caught up in like the media part of it. And the the content, and I understand this is the world we live in, but discipline and the education of how you wake up in the morning and you focus on being a pro is from the morning all the way till the end. It's not just the game. So just, you can have three guys, you can play one-on-one, you can play two-on-two, you can play, I mean, you can play all day, find playgrounds, find out where the pickup games are. There's always action, you can always get better.
All right, where we going?
To the kids, the youngins.
Here we go.
Who do you think is better, Michael Jordan or LeBron James?
Who do I think is better? You know, I thought Baron Davis said something about that. It's like, you don't ask, like, who's better, Picasso or Dali. You know, they're both, greatness is greatness. So who's the best player that I played against? I would say LeBron James. But who's the guy? Like, I hate the GOAT. Like, can't LeBron James and Michael Jordan be great? It has to be who's better. They never played against each other. They're completely different players. Completely different players. It's hard to say, like, let's just appreciate greatness. Like, oh, Kobe Bryant was eighth in the hit. Like, if I say eighth, like, you guys are gonna look at me like I'm crazy. Like, I played against Kobe Bryant. His greatness, it was real. It was real. So we have to put an order on who's the best. That's just marketing campaign. Like Michael Jordan was as great as they come, and LeBron James is just as great.
You know, for a second, I thought you were about to say Baron Davis is the greatest.
Because he said, look at Mike, and he said, well, Baron Davis.
No, but we don't do that with, like, artist painters.
No.
So why would we have to do that with athletes?
It gives them something to talk about. They say comparison is the thief of joy. We've got another question right here.
As one of the youngsters who is aspiring to play the freshman year, somebody said the basketball like yourself, what would you say are the three most important things to not only make it to the professional level but make an impact at the professional level?
People forget this is a team sport. You get paid individually, the journey is very lonely, but this is a team sport. So I think when you're looking at the scouts, whether it's college scouts or NBA scouts, the first thing they're looking at is attitude. And I know, like, you know, I'm sure a lot you've heard that many times, but it is the truth. When you get good enough and that scout is there, that NBA scout is there, the first thing he's going to do is he's going to see how you react when there's adversity. There's always adversity in a basketball game. Whether the coach takes you out early, whether you get in foul trouble, the game is very emotional. So how you carry yourself in those moments, huge. I would say that's number one, attitude. The discipline piece, you know, whether you win, you lose, you have 30 points or you have 1 point and you play like shit. You wake up the next day and you do it all over again. The work never stops. Like Kobe Bryant, 40 point game winner, he's in the gym in the morning, you know, right next to the rim, shooting right over the rim. It's like clockwork every day. And that's when you start seeing the gains.
What would you say the biggest wall as a basketball player is that you face and how do you overcome it?
The biggest wall?
Yeah.
The biggest wall is, it's in your mind, it's in your head. It's like your self-esteem, what you think about yourself. You know, it's as you get higher and higher in the ranking, it's like you become a public figure. So you get criticized a lot. Can you handle that? Can you be coached? You know, especially when things aren't going well for you. Are you still a good teammate or is it all about you? Like sometimes, what happens if you get to the game and the coach decides to play your teammate and then you're on the bench and you don't play at all? Can you handle that? And what's your attitude gonna be like? Oh, I don't care? Or is it going to be like, okay, are you going to scream at, are you going to make a fool of yourself and scream at your coach? Get in a fight with your coach because he didn't play you? Because you're pissed off? Or are you going to go in there and just keep grinding every day? Like, look at a guy like Rudy Gobert, man. Like, if you would have told me that Rudy Gobert would be a four-time defensive player of the year, like, if you saw him the first time, he could barely dribble. Like, the guy just kept working. And Jalen Brunson, same thing. I saw Jalen Brunson, his dad was my coach for the Chicago Bulls, an assistant coach. So I used to go to Jalen Brunson's game when he was in eighth grade. If you would have told me that he would lead New York Knicks and bring the stability that he brought to that whole city, one of the hardest markets to play in, the biggest, you're playing at Madison Square Garden. If you would have told me in eighth grade that he would be the guy carrying the New York Knicks, I would tell you you're crazy. So not everybody, you don't know right away. So just keep building.
Hi.
Hello. Hello.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
You're known for your energy and passion on court. How did you cultivate that intensity without letting it burn you out?
It definitely did burn me out. That's, the truth is, I really cared about winning, and almost to the point where it was too much. So I think fans appreciated it, but after a win, it was hard for me to sleep. After a loss, like, forget it, like, don't talk to me. I mean, you can imagine, like, my girlfriend at the time, like, it's like we're having dinner, but like, I'm thinking about the game at the same, like, it was just, I sleep a lot better now, you know, now that it's over. But I think your intent, it comes from within, it comes from all the work that you put in, and, you know, you just have to put yourself in that mindset before a game. You're a different person. Like, if you see some of these guys before the game, some guys will be talking, but most guys don't. They're not talking to people in the arena. They're not looking into the arena. They are locked into what they need to do. And everybody has a different role to play. And my role was to be the energy guy, the intensity. I didn't make 1-3 my whole career. You know, like, my game, the way that I affected winning was my intensity and my passion.
All right, we've got time for one more question. We can bring that side. We're going to go to one of the OGs. We've been waiting patiently. It's the last question, so you've got to make it a good one.
Bonjour, Joachim.
Ça va bien.
Français. Okay, sorry, guys. I'm an OG. I basically grew up watching your dad. So your dad is one of my legends. And knowing that you talk about your passion and your mindset, obviously having this legacy brings you all those titles. So my son has a question based on that. How do you guys, NBA players, struggle with your mental health? Like you just mentioned about your patient.
Mm-hmm. I think the kids have to deal with that a lot more now than we did, to be honest, because it's so public. Like, if I get dunked on, when I played, it was in the newspaper the next day. You saw a picture of me getting dunked on. Now, it's on everybody's phone around the world in HD, and they can see inside your soul. So, I never undermine what the kids are going through. It's a different thing. Now, mental health, as a competitor, I'm looking for weakness. If you are in your feelings, I smell blood. So when I see guys going on TV and talking about mental health, I'm like, what are you doing? Like, yo, we all have our issues. We all have our issues. Like, we all go through shit. It's not, like, even at the highest level, like, it's tough. But that's the whole point. If I see somebody all in their feelings, hurt, dealing with mental health, that's another guy that I can just
get out of my way. I'm trying to win this championship.
I never did, but that was my mindset anyway.
Listen, ladies and gentlemen, make some noise once again for Joe Quinn.
That was a little aggressive. We're talking about mental health. I'm not saying that mental health is very, it's an issue. It's real. I mean, I don't know if you have young people that you're coaching that are going through, you know, some heavy stuff. Just as an OG, just be there for them. You know, I hate OGs that are like, yeah, in my day it was like this. No, this is a whole completely different thing that these kids are dealing with. And let's not try to compare what we went through. All we can do as OGs is be there for them and build their trust. And if you have that competitive thing going on with these kids, then you're not a good OG, you know?
Appreciate you clarifying that one for us.
Sorry.
While I got you guys here, I want you to make some noise for the Foot Locker team who have given you this opportunity, because it's not every day that an NBA legend can share with you.
Joe, appreciate it, my bro.
It was okay?
Yeah, it's all out of respect. Man.
I appreciate you, man. Right. Respect, bro.
Love.
Yes, sir.
Appreciate it.